When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
We heard yesterday from the National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, that there was no link to the war in Ukraine during the negotiations for the prisoner exchange. Let's go to Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. And Joe, a lot of people were wondering if the Ukraine war came up during those talks. Probably not, I guess. And I know that doesn't surprise you, does it?
Hey, Bob. Well, good afternoon from Kyiv. I would say, with my general sense of skepticism about Washington, you know, because they had a lot of these things. You know, they couldn't do these negotiations in public. There was a lot of maneuvering that had to happen. And so I would be doubtful that that was the case, that Ukraine was totally not, you know, somehow, you know, set aside totally even in the thought process of the negotiators. I'm sure that, you know, for both the Russian side and the Western side, that, you know, what's happening in Ukraine is part of this. If you look at, you know, Russia's goal, which they've made clear in their actions after 2.5 years, is to take Ukraine, to take as much of Ukraine as possible. And so everything that Russia does is, you know, pretty strategic and somehow geared in that direction. In fact, there was a lot of frustration with this exchange among Ukrainians and also Germans, because the Russians got, so in return for, you know, innocent reporters, for example, you know, Evan Gershkovich of the Wall Street Journal, you know, in return for sort of innocent people, Russia received a notorious criminal who was in a German prison because he had he was convicted in Germany of assassinating a Chechen leader in a public park in Berlin. It was a Chechen rebel who's, you know, sort of in the Chechens, like the Ukrainians, in the 1990s, the Chechens tried to resist Moscow rule. And so there was a leader was assassinated in Berlin. And so the guy who killed him was in a German prison, and he was one of those released. And, you know, there still are many Ukrainians in Ukrainian POWs and also civilians in captivity in Russia. You have prisoners of war. You also have children who've been deported. And so, you know, and probably it's an impossible hope, but this just shows some of the frustration for Ukrainians after the 2.5 years of war. They wish there had at least been, say, you know, some Ukrainians released in that exchange. And so that's it's a frustration here for people, although I know it's, of course, a good moment for the Americans who received, you know, who were able to return. But this is, I think, from the perspective I see here, and then including from Americans who are trying to help Ukraine, you know, every time you negotiate with Russia, it affects the outcome of this war. In fact, Garry Kasparov, you know, one of the few prominent Russian dissidents still alive, the world chess master, he suggested that every time there's a prominent person captured by the Russians, that the West send an additional F-16 to Ukraine. Sort of a much more aggressive stance than what we saw with this negotiation. So I can say there's a lot of debate about it. And of course, these things are going to be tricky and not easy even to discuss.
As you probably know, Joe, there is some talk, you might call it hope, that if Putin engaged in this diplomacy for the big prisoner swap, maybe he would enter into talks to end the war. What do you think?
I don't see that attitude here in Ukraine. And I think if you look at, I mean, why would Putin have captured, why would Russia have captured a Wall Street Journal reporter last year? That's a great person to capture, because you know that, you know, a decent civilized country like the United States is going to want to get that person back. And you want to get back your, you know, your sort of top spies and masterminds. So it's a good chess move on the Kremlin's part, and then the Kremlin, you know, gained a lot out of this. When it comes to Ukraine, this does not indicate a change in attitude at all. But it's just an ongoing part of the different ways that war is fought. And as we look at that, I've been hearing a lot the past days, especially here, but just the extraordinary things that Ukrainians are doing with drones. And as we see that this is, you know, this is a war that happens in the negotiation tables over prisoners. It also happens with cheap drones that are, you know, you can buy, you know, you can order on Amazon. And these are now some of the key weapons in this war. 1 year ago, Ukraine was using 10,000 drones per month, according to the estimates I saw. Now that's 150,000 of these. They're called FPV, which means first-person view drones. And they're very cheap, just a few hundred dollars. You load them up with explosives and send them to the enemy. Of course, Russians are using these as well. But as Ukrainians have faced ammunition shortages, and according to some reports that I hear, for example, there's a guy, Stephen Moore. He was a longtime former chief of staff to many congressmen on Capitol Hill on the Republican side. And he's got a Ukrainian, it's called Ukrainian Freedom Project. And he's been analyzing these things, and there still is a delay of ammunition, even after that package was passed in Washington in April. But Ukrainians are making up for lack of innovation, for lack of ammunition with drones, and to great effect. And I've heard from a lot of people, Ukrainians and Americans here, that the U.S. is sort of missing out on this. They're sort of overlooking this rapid innovation that's happening with drone technologies. And according to Stephen Moore, the former Capitol Hill chief of staff, he said, when retired U.S. military personnel come to visit Ukraine and they go to the front line, they say that they know that U.S. American units would not last more than 2 days in such an environment because the war has adapted so much. And so there is an encouragement, even for America and American defense industry, to pay more attention to the development that's happening here out of necessity and with Ukrainian ingenuity.
Yeah, I was reading something yesterday about some of the weapons Ukraine uses. In some cases, they're actually old Russian-era weapons, aren't they?
Yeah, certainly. There's a lot of that. You know, Ukrainian jets, the MiG jets, and especially before the arrival of American equipment in larger numbers, they had to rely on that. A lot of that Russian equipment was made in Ukraine and in Poland during the Soviet days. You know, Ukraine was long known. It had a great reputation for engineering and development. So Ukrainians are able to use and to repair these things. In fact, that's been a problem for the Russians, is that some of their old equipment, if it was made, for example, in Poland, they have a hard time getting things fixed. And so that has been an advantage to Ukraine. And meanwhile, NATO has a billion-euro fund to support defense tech and development. The United States also has something called Defense Innovation Unit with something like a $1 billion budget. And what's amazing is that none of that money can be used to invest in any company inside Ukraine. It's just a rule that they have. And so here you see there's something like 750 defense industry startups here in Ukraine, often like in someone's basement. And they're producing incredible stuff. It's making a difference at the front line. And they stay in touch with the soldiers and they adapt quickly. And they do this with, you know, not much investment and on the cheap. And so this is, you know, this is how you know, necessity is the mother of invention, I guess. But this is the that I think this is, we're seeing the course of warfare, the nature of warfare being changed because of the developments that are happening here.
Got an email from one of the listeners who enjoys our talks every day, Joe. Terry writes, Bob, do you have a suggestion for a donation to a Ukraine charity? Joseph?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many that I recommend. We have our project, Ukrainian Freedom News. You can visit ukrainianfreedomnews.com. And I have a request, which we've not been able to fulfill yet, but of more additional FPV drones, these like for about $350 each to get to the Kharkiv region. But if you also prefer to donate for more humanitarian purposes, you can go to UkrainianFreedomNews.com and note your purpose. But there are many great, I mean, there's a group called the Frontline Kitchen that started off as they were cooking food for soldiers at the front, sort of preparing meals, and now they're making drones, and they're doing some incredible stuff with incredible innovation. So on Monday, I can share information on how to support some other groups. But for now, UkrainianFreedomNews.com, and you can follow all of our social media there as well.
There's even a group trying to help animals, injured animals, displaced animals there. You probably know about that, huh?
Yeah, there's several of these groups. I know of a few of them, especially in Kharkiv region. One group, they have a shelter that was near one of the recent missiles that hit in Kharkiv. And so they went from saving animals to saving humans who were injured on the streets. But this shows that no matter what your interest or purpose is, you have people from all over the world who show up here to help. And I even know there was at one of these kitchens that makes food for the soldiers, there was an American who's a vegetarian. And now, and took it upon himself. His job is chopping up the chicken. So people facing their fears and frustrations. But generally, yeah, whatever your interest is, there's a way to plug yourself into the ecosystem of help and support here in Ukraine.
Yeah, well, it's like that country song goes. Most people are good, and Luke Bryan sings that song, and it's true. Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. I hope you have a peaceful weekend. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Bob. Until Monday.